Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships, and coordinator and host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic so many months ago, Spirit continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program, as you can see on your screen, is called The Importance of Dividends in a Diversified Portfolio. We are so happy to welcome back to the Spirit Forum, David Winston, who's the Executive Wealth Advisor of Winston Wealth Advisors, to present to us. He's presented to us before, and always we've learned just so much from him and with such helpful information. We also want to say thank you to Winston Health Advisors, which is one of our corporate sponsors, and you can see a lot of information and the web link on all of the Spirit emails and on our Spirit webpage. It is my honor and privilege to turn the Spirit Forum over to David Winston. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you, Robertson Steinig. It's a pleasure to be with you and everybody today. And just a quick Torah thought. This past Shabbos, Vayishlach, we learn of the encounter of Yaakov and Esav. And we learned that, you know, Yaakov sent presents to Esav. And Rashi explains that when Jacob said that he had everything, he meant that he had enough for all his needs. So it kind of occurred to me over Shabbos, I was thinking, like, was he speaking about his, you know, his family, the Jewish community at large? You know, what was the needs? What was the definition? And a rabbi of mine, Rabbi Epstein in Dallas, reminded me years ago. He said, you know, we're Hashem's bankers, and we distribute the money, you know, through our Meiser, Tzedakah, whatever. And it occurred to me that, you know, we're the stewards of the money, you know, and now more than ever, when you think about, you know, the dollars that we have that we're all sending to Eretz Israel, you know, in their crisis, you know, how blessed we all are to have those funds available. So the point of today's program is to talk about the importance of dividends and building a properly diversified portfolio. All right. So in February, we talked about, we talked about the holistic planning process and creating an income stream to keep pace with inflation. And we talked specifically about the retirement planning process, you know, understanding where we are today, and then also where our needs are going to be years from now. And today we're going to spend most of the time talking about investment planning, you know, how we build a portfolio with the challenges of today in mind. All right, so let's talk about the headwinds. And as we alluded to in February, it's the rising cost world that we live in. Just over the last 3 years, the cost of goods and services are up 18%. If you look in the grocery store, they're up far greater than that. The last 10 years, we have to have an income that's 31% higher today just to maintain the same standard of living that we had 10 years ago. And if you look at the last 20 years, it takes $167 today for what $100 goods bought in 2003. Now, the comedian Henny Youngman had a funny take on inflation. And he said, Americans are getting stronger. 20 years ago, it took two people to carry $10 worth of groceries. Well, today, a five-year-old can do it. I just thought that was a cute quote. And that is really what it's all about today. So what are our overall goals? What are we trying to accomplish as we plan for, you know, the next 30 years? Well, the whole goal should be to provide a steady and rising stream of income, that grows greater than the pace of inflation. Simple as that. And then the second rule is don't run out of money. That's the key. So it all goes back to the retirement planning. You know, the investment portfolio really serves the plan because we have to quantify how much rate of return do we need to earn in order to support the plan. Do we need 3%, 5%, 7%? You know, what is the required amount? And for each person, that's unique. It's no two plans are identical. And in the 30 years that I've been doing this, you know, and the plans that we've created for people all over the country, you know, it's with that in mind, you know, what is it going to take in order for us to have a successful retirement and the income streams that we need? So again, how much income do we need today to maintain our standard of living? And how much do we need over the next 30 years? And there's always things that come up. It's we got to replace a car every 5 to 10 years. You know, we're helping our kids maybe with a down payment on a home, sending money overseas. All those things are part of a plan. So nobody retires. I've never had in the 30 years anybody said, I have too much money. You know, there's always a need and there's always a good place for money. So today, we've kind of have a bubble of cash going on, and I'm going to show you in a chart in a second, what does that mean and how has that played out over history? So this particular chart, I think, is very fascinating, and it basically quantifies the amount of money in money market accounts, you know, short-term accounts in trillions of dollars going back to 2007. So you can see during the financial crisis, when the economy was not doing very well, people hoarded their cash and there was almost $4 trillion of cash. And then the market hit its bottom about March of 2009. And people realized, oops, I'm not making any money on my cash and the train left the station and I'm not diversified. I've got my money in cash. So over history, we find that individuals generally make the wrong decisions at the wrong time. Case in point, if you had remained invested from March 9th, 2009, the bottom of the market, over the next 6 months, the S&P 500 index, the 500 largest companies in the United States, $100,000 investment would be $155,000 6 months later. And then we had the period of very low interest rates for many, many years. And then there was the hoarding of cash again at the January of 2020, when the pandemic came on. We didn't have a vaccine there and people were just really, really scared, right? Well, from March 23rd, which was the bottom of the market, over the next 6 months, the market went up 46%. People realized, oops, the train left the station, I'm not on it. And again, after 2022 was such a difficult year, now there's over $5 trillion in cash that has to be put to work at some point. But the next chart's going to tell you something interesting on, well, why is there so much cash today, even though things have come back very nicely? Well, it all has to do with the yield curve, right? So what we're looking at here, going back to 2021, if you looked at the yield curve loaning money to the government, whether it's for 1 year, 7 years, 10, 20, or 30 years, so if you loan the money to the government at the end of 2021, you would have gotten about 0.5% on your money, very similar to what a CD would have paid at that time. You would have had to go out to 10 years to get 1.5% return on a 10-year government bond. Well, if inflation is running 2 or 3% at that time, and you're only making 1.5%, you're really kind of losing money. Well, fast forward 2 years, and a Fed that has been very aggressive in increasing interest rates, now we have what we call an inverted curve, which is usually at the time of some stress in the economy where the government says, A, We want to get inflation under control. We don't want rapid cost of living increasing. And it has been effective in recent months that the Federal Reserve is probably at a point where they may be pausing on their rate increases. But the interesting part of it is, where are the returns? In the shortest part of the yield curve. You know, you could put money in a one-year CD or a one-year treasury and get over 5% on your money. But if you lock it in for 10 years, you know, you're actually making about the same or a little bit less. So why is that the case? Well, because right now there's fear of, well, the Fed may increase interest rates a little bit more. And if I bought a bond at 4.9% and new bonds paying 5.5%, well, I'm going to lose a lot of money if I lock in a 10-year bond. So in all our clients' portfolios, we pretty much move most of the bond or cushion money to the short-term side. And just to show you the adverse effects of owning bonds, in 2022, the average bond lost over 15%. Because if you bought a bond at 4% and now a new bond is paying 5%, nobody wants your old bond that's paying 4%. So that's the risk of having money out on the yield curve. So more on that in a minute. All right, so to the main part of the program, why are dividends such a vital part of building a retirement portfolio? Well, basically, a corporation has several different choices on declaring dividends. And really, what is a dividend? It's basically a portion of the profits that are returned to the shareholders of a company. So each quarter, the board of the directors of company decides, okay, here's our earnings for the quarter, and here's how much money we're going to send to our stockholders. Now, growth-oriented companies, they retain most of their earnings. They're reinvesting it back into the company for future growth, paying down debt, et cetera. Some companies are very dividend-centric. They love to pay dividends and return a portion as a reward to their stockholders. And then there's some companies, and you can do a combination of all three of these, the board of directors has at their disposal, or they can buy back shares, which is a very efficient way of saying, okay, we're going to reduce the number of shares in the marketplace because we're going to buy them back with the cash of the company. And then therefore, all existing shareholders are going to own a little bit more of the stock in which they own. So all three of these things are tools of what companies do with their profits, all right? And again, a growth company, they're gonna grow their share price. You know, these are mainly like technology type companies. They wanna put all the money back into the company to make it continue to grow. And a value or a dividend paying companies, they wanna grow the dividend. They want to have a way of saying, okay, we made a dollar, we're going to give 20 cents to everybody, right? And then next year we made a dollar 20, well, we're going to give 30 cents to all our stockholders. So their goal is to increase the value of the company and pay out rising dividends. That's generally what a dividend or value of company's focus is. All right. So what this chart's going to illustrate is we know that value-oriented companies are much more cost effective in terms of what you're having to pay for future earnings than a growth company, right? So the ratio that you have is value-oriented companies trade at 30% less price to earnings than a growth company does, right? That's the long-term average. So value companies trade at about 14 times their annual earnings. Growth companies are trading average about 20 times their earnings. Well, now what was a great bargain is even a better bargain because value companies are trading even a little bit below their long-term trend, and growth companies are getting more and more expensive to buy those future growths. The current dividend yield of value companies is about 2.67%. which is close to the historical average. And growth companies are even paying out less dividends than historically they've done. So that's why dividends in today's world are a real big part of building a portfolio. And if you look at the easy money era, when interest rates were really, really low, the companies that were out of favor were really the value-oriented companies, those that had conservative balance sheets. You know, they didn't have a lot of debt. They were companies that were relying on interest income, like banks and insurance companies. They were out of favor. And then companies that had a great deal of discipline relative to their expense and their returns. So they were out of favor because everybody was, and I say everybody, I'm just saying generally, a lot of people were chasing, you know, the next big growth company out there. So what are the measures that we look at when we're analyzing a company? And I'm not going to get too deep into the weeds here, but a low price earning is desirable. And what does that mean? Well, if we have a stock that's valued at $100, and the earnings of the company are $10 a year, well, that has $100 divided by 10, a price earnings ratio of 10 times earnings. So you have to spend 10 times the earnings to own the stock, right? But if the earnings yield higher is better, for example, if the company earnings are $10 and it's a $100 stock, well, its earnings are 10% yield. It's a very efficient company. And a dividend yield is, well, if a $100 stock pays out $3.50 of dividends, it's yielding $3.50 basically a share. But then the payout ratio says, well, how much is this $3.50 a percentage of the overall earnings of the company? So if the company's earnings are $10 a share and they're paying out only $3.50 of it and reinvesting the other $6.50, well, they're only paying out 35% of their earnings. So there's a lot of room for them to be able to increase those dividends over time. So an example of a dividend-focused company, $100 a share, let's say, their earnings are $12.50. They have a PE of 8, which is very inexpensive. And a lot of the banks were trading really in this area for quite some time. And they're paying out $3.50 a share, 3.5% dividend yield, and a payout ratio 28% of their overall earnings. So that's kind of a broad brush of what a dividend-focused company would look like. So when we analyze companies in our portfolios, we're looking for, okay, what's the dividend yield of the company? That's the starting point. But more importantly, by what percentage did the dividend increase over the previous 1, 3, and 5 years? Is it a growing dividend? And most importantly, is the company earning the dividend? Because the last thing you want is if a company doesn't have much in the way of earnings, but they're giving some dividends out to their stockholders as a reward, well, that's coming from their cash and not from their earnings. So we try to avoid companies that aren't earning their dividends. And you may have seen the title Dividend Aristocrats. These are a group out of the S&P 500, and there's about 65 companies that meet that definition of consistent growing dividends over a 25-year period. So yeah, there's about 60, 65 companies at any given time that meet that definition. And then there's another category called the Dividend Kings, which are rising dividends over a 50-year period. All right. So now I want to just make a point of when people think about investing and they hear about, well, just buy an index, you know, just buy the S&P 500 index, you know, that's not something we're in favor of, but we, for illustration purposes, this is what we're showing. But if you look at the top 10 companies out of the largest 10 companies out of the S&P 500, they have 32% of the assets. So if you have $1,000 invested in the S&P 500, $324 of that is only with 10 companies. And those 10 companies represent 20% of the overall earnings of the S&P 500. So if they were earning 30% of it, well, that might be a reasonable thing to see. And if you look at the remaining stocks, the gray line, you know, the average has been 15.7 times earnings, you know, the bottom 490, and they're trading at pretty much that same price now. But when you look at the top 10 companies, they're trading 133% of their 20-year average. So 26 times earnings. So these are very, very expensive companies. And we would probably caution against that. But the overall S&P 500, when you average it all out, is trading at pretty much historical figures today. And this chart represents the price earnings ratio going back to 1998. And right now it's just slightly above the 25-year average. And, you know, at the peak of 2020, early 2020, when there was no earnings of companies because of the pandemic or the earnings were reduced, you know, companies were trading really, really high overall. But that has all since measured itself. Now, I'm originally from Missouri, and that's the show me state. So now I want to illustrate actual numbers of an individual going back to 1993 who invested $100,000 in different types of investments. So the first one we'll look at is a six-month treasury. So very short-term money market type money, and they take out 4% or $4,000 a year. The second category is a fixed index, a bond index, and taking out 5% withdrawals. And the third category is, well, we're going to start with 4% all money invested in bonds, but we're going to increase it to keep pace with inflation. That $4,000 will go up 4% every year to keep pace with inflation. Then we'll look at, well, what if we put 100% of the money, which we would never suggest, in a S&P 500 index, and take out 4% of withdrawals and increase those by 4% each year. So it's really a similar withdrawal strategy. And then the last one would be, what if we just took out the dividends each year? What would that look like? All right. So let's go through this, and I think you'll find it very fascinating. All right. So the first one, whoops, went too far. All right, this is, we're taking out 4% of a six-month treasury bill. So $100,000 invested July 1st, 1993. And you can see the first year, full year, we took out $4,000. And then the column on the right shows what was the value of the investment after withdrawals each year, right? So you can see we had a consistent withdrawal, but you know the problem. $4,000 5 years from now won't buy the same groceries that it bought recently, right? So the $100,000 stays fairly consistent over time, but then we're just not getting there because you have a total of $120,000 of income over the 30-year period, but the rate of return was only 3% a year on average. So in order to make the full $4,000, we had to start dipping into the principal. Dipping into the principal by 2009. All right, so we end up with $52,000 after $120,000 withdrawals. All right, so you could see the principal started declining. All right, the next one is we're going to look at the bond index with a 4% withdrawal and increase it by 4% every year. All right, so we have $4,000 the first year, and then each year we increase it by 4% to keep pace with inflation. And our $100,000 investment at one point went up to about $128,000. And then we've been in the dipping into principal mode since about 2015 or so. So the rate of return was better on a longer term bond portfolio, but our income was good. We had $224,000 instead of the $120,000, but we had to dip into the principal to get there. And we only ended up with $27,000. The rate of return was 5.5% a year on average. Okay. Now this chart represents, and we're going to do there's a summation page at the end that you'll see. But here we show investing in the S&P 500, $100,000, July of 1993. And we're going to take out 4% and then increase that 4% each year, just like we did on the previous bond portfolio. And then you'll notice your $100,000, and then here's the increase in the dividends. What happened along the way? Well, your $100,000 after taking out $224,000 of income, wow, was worth $839,000 in July 31st of this year for an average return of 10.22%. But I want to point out something very interesting. You'll notice that the portfolio went from $100,000 to about $300,000. And then we had the financial crisis. Well, your income really didn't change. It actually went up, but the price of the investment on paper, if you sold, would have dropped in value temporarily. And then it resumed itself again. And I heard an interesting encounter that an individual had with Warren Buffett back during the financial crisis. And he said, "Mr. Buffett, you lost $1 billion in value in your investments." And he says, "How do you figure?" He goes, "Well, your account is worth less." He says, "I didn't lose anything. I didn't sell." So remember, you're owning bits and pieces of great companies and bonds and whatnot in your portfolio. So as long as you're not panicking, everything comes back. So you could see it peaked out about $291,000. It went down temporarily, but then it came back and it resumed itself. And even in the last, you could see 2022, it dropped a bunch, but it comes back. So the rule of thumb is investments occasionally go down, but they never stay down. Okay. And then the last one is, well, what if I just took out the dividends and lived on that? Okay, here we go. Yeah, so this just shows the dividends. So you could see we're taking out less than 4,000. We're just taking out what we need. And then you could see the dividends just keep going up, 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 up. And even during the financial crisis, the dividends dipped a little bit, but then they resumed themselves. And your $100,000 investment, after you took out the dividends, you had a total income of $205,000, a little bit less than the $224,000 that we saw in the previous model by taking 4% and then increasing by 4%. But instead of having $890,000, you've reinvested your dividend, you've reinvested all the growth. You have $1,021,000. All right. So when you look at the different categories, you know, $120,000 of income for the 6-month treasury with a 4% fixed withdrawal, that's 52. I didn't show the illustration, but a 5% withdrawal of the bond would have been 150. And at the end of the 30 years, you would have had 103,000. So we know bonds paid about 5% on average over the last 30 years. And then the if we took out 4% with a 4% increase on the bond portfolio, it did give us more income, but at the expense of the principal. And then the income on the 4% with a 4% increase, you have 893, and then the just dividends only 1,021,000. So that is the advantage of a diversified portfolio and, you know, owning great companies that pay dividends. Now, in case you're wondering, well, what if I reinvested all those dividends and I was blessed and I didn't need that for an income? Well, you'd have $1,822,000 in the end of July 31st in your portfolio. Same returns, just reinvesting the dividends for future growth. So you're, you know, they asked Baron Rothschild, what is the greatest force on earth? And it was compound interest. So your money reinvested, earning more and more. So that's the general program. A few disclosures. It's for general information only. It's not specific advice or recommendations for any individual. And all investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. And, you know, the S&P 500 is an unmanaged index, and dividends are never guaranteed, but they can be reduced or eliminated at any time by a company. So that's the program. And any questions, I'm happy to address them.
Okay, thank you so much, David. Do you want to take the share screen off so then we can see everybody?
Sure, let me see how to do that.
In the meantime, if anyone has questions, please chat them in either to David or to myself. We will take as many as we can.
All right, I'm gonna need your help. Where do I go?
I can stop the share screen for you. Okay, so I'll do that.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead and do that. I'm challenged.
Wait, it didn't go. 1 second.
I did it.
Okay. So are there any questions that anyone has? How to find the best dividend companies? Okay. Do you find?
Well, the way we do it, again, it all starts on a financial plan, and we're building the plan to meet the needs. So what we do is we go out in the world when we build portfolios, and we have 20 different, you know, sub-advisors, mutual fund companies, ETFs, and we hire them to find the best dividend paying companies. And they have their screenings where they're looking at it as, you know, last 1, 3, 5 years, what percentage of their earnings or dividends, et cetera. So, you know, there's some really wonderful companies that we work with that find those companies for us.
If somebody wants to know what your charge is.
Well, yeah. So
I'm sure very personal, right?
Yeah. So it just depends. But I would suggest, you know, go to the OU website, click on our logo, Winston Wealth Advisors. It'll take you to the winstonwealthadvisors.com website. And you can click at the bottom. It says contact us and just put a little note in there. And I'm more than happy to respond and answer those questions. But, you know, we manage over $400 million and we've been doing this for 30 years and we don't advertise. It's just word of mouth and people are very happy with the way we do business.
I have a question here. What is a fiduciary and how important is that that's the person, you know, that you're handling?
Sure,
you can explain first what it is.
Right. A fiduciary is an SEC determination. We're fiduciaries. And basically, you're obligated to always act in the interest of the clients. Simple as that. And we're fiduciaries. And I think it's very important to have that.
And somebody wants to know where you're located, but where you're located is not relevant to anybody else. I mean,
right. Yeah, we have two offices in Texas. I'm speaking from our office in Miami, and you know, we have clients all over the country. So we can handle it anywhere.
Wait, internationally as well? If somebody
It becomes a little more tricky. It becomes tricky outside the United States. We're happy to help people, steer them in the right direction, but primarily it's in the United States.
Got it. Do you have any questions waiting on your chat?
I don't see where they are. Let's see.
It would come up under like.
Oh, there it is. how do I bonds compare to the S&P 500, I guess. I bonds are just, loaning money to the government. And, their rates are fine, but it's doesn't necessarily make for a portfolio.
But you're saying that that's not something you would suggest including?
Well,
it was such a big deal last year with the I-bond, and now it's not such a big deal.
No, it's not. It was one of those gifts that the government gave out. But no, it's not. You're limited on what you can buy in those anyway. But no, bonds are a component to a portfolio, but I-bonds are just one small piece of it. Yeah.
Do you have any comment about, let's say, Israeli bonds? Beyond the idea of obviously supporting Israel, financially.
Oh, for sure. I mean, to us, it's, what Israel needs is what we need to do. And whether it's Israel bonds or outright donations, that's up to somebody to figure out. But there's nothing wrong with Israel bonds as a component. Yeah. Let's see. What percentage of clients close their accounts at a loss? That's a great question. In our practice, none, because we help our clients understand the long term, and we just don't lose clients over current economics. It's people remain invested for the long term. That's the key. And it's generally people that are trying to do it themselves, they get scared, they panic, and sell out. Yeah, working with an advisor is not a costly thing at all. It's a benefit. All right, I don't see any other questions.
Somebody just wants to know, I'm not sure if you want to answer this, but somebody wants to know the difference, let's say, between Winston Wealth Advisors and other companies. I mean, obviously.
Right, sure. Right, yeah. Winston Wealth Advisors, we've been around for 30 years, and we're part of LPL Financial, which is the largest broker-dealer for independent advisors in the country. And there's 22,000 advisors, and we're in the top 1% of all those advisors in the country. So we've got a lot of experience, knowledge, wisdom behind what we do. And I think that makes a huge difference. Yeah, you don't want to be working with an advisor who's just starting out their practice. It's just easier to work with somebody that's been around a while.
Anyone else have any other questions? David, nothing more on your end?
No, and I wish everybody tremendous success in their endeavors. If we can help you, feel free to reach out, and just go to the website, Winston Wealth Advisors, or go to the OU, click on the logo, and that'll reach us. And at the bottom of the screen, you can just check to for us to help you with any specific questions. We're more than happy to do so. And then again, we'll come back in next February or March and come back with another beautiful program. And I think we're talking about doing something on Social Security. So we'll
that would be great. Oh, somebody wants to know, do you also help with tax planning?
Well, we do basic tax planning in the financial plan, but you always want to run it by your tax advisor as well. But sure, yeah, we try to build portfolios that are tax efficient. And no, definitely tax planning is part of it.
Okay. Well, I want to just thank David so much for yet another wonderful, wonderful program. As we always do, as soon as the recording is available, we will get it out to everybody. It's lovely and wonderful to get all the requests, and so complimentary that everybody wants all these programs, but you don't have to ask us, because as soon as you register, That is an automatic that you will get that recording later on. There have been a couple of programs throughout the last few hundred we've done where we were not allowed to record it. We tell you that in advance, that you have to be on it live. But other than that, every program is recorded. Ultimately, it will be archived, but that doesn't happen as quickly. But you will all, anybody who is listening live and anyone who is not listening live, as long as you officially registered with us, we have your email address. Oh, please make sure when you put your email address in that it's correct, because some of them have bounced back and you're not going to get it if it wasn't done correctly. And that does happen. So try to take a look at it afterwards to make sure that you did it properly. If not, just do it again. So I just want to tell everybody, okay, so next week, we will be off for Hanukkah. So everybody should enjoy Hanukkah with their families, with their friends. The following week, and we'll be putting that out with today's recording, our program will be with Miriam Hendelis, who is a music therapist. It is called The Role of Music to Help and Heal. So that should be a very beautiful program, and it'll be very meaningful to everyone. And before we leave, with Hanukkah coming, with the end of the year, with the end of the secular year, I want to remind everyone, as you're finalizing your charitable donations, the Spirit Program would really appreciate however you can give to us. We know that everybody, every single one of us is and certainly should be giving. Eretz Yisrael of the OU has a wonderful campaign going on. So we totally understand that. And we totally understand if you have to give a smaller amount to Spirit, but if everyone could give in whatever capacity they feel comfortable, the donation button that is on all the emails you receive, it's so appreciated. And we are really trying to grow this program for a bigger and better sessions, more than just the Tuesday. We are doing other things. However you can help us, it's truly appreciated. So thank you so much. Have a great week. Be well, be happy, be healthy. Freilich Mechanica to everybody. And I'll wish you a good Shabbos in advance. Take care. And thank you so much again, David.